A Navy SEAL sniper peers through his scope in Ramadi's Malab district. Seconds later, gunfire erupts. When the smoke clears, an Iraqi soldier lies dead, killed not by insurgents, but by friendly fire. For Commander Jock Willink, this wasn't a training simulation where everyone goes home for dinner. This was the kind of catastrophic failure that ends careers and haunts leaders forever. Yet what happened next would forge a leadership philosophy so powerful it would transform how Fortune 500 companies think about accountability. Standing before his commanding officers, Willink didn't mention faulty intelligence or communication breakdowns. Instead, he said three words that changed everything. It was my fault. This crucible of combat, where theory meets brutal reality and mistakes carry the ultimate price, produced principles now reshaping boardrooms across America. Because when lives depend on your decisions, leadership stops being about charisma and becomes about what actually works. When projects fail, the finger pointing begins. Marketing blames sales. Sales blames product development. Everyone cites budget constraints or unmotivated teams. Extreme ownership shatters this pattern. Leaders bear complete responsibility for everything their team does or fails to do. This isn't self-flagellation, it's operational effectiveness. When a manufacturing VP's cost reduction initiative stalled for a year, he blamed resistant managers and change-averse employees. The breakthrough came when he asked, "What am I doing wrong?" That shift from external blame to internal accountability marked the turning point. The principle: before questioning your team's performance, examine your leadership. Did you communicate clearly? Provide adequate resources? Verify understanding? When subordinates underperform, look in the mirror first. This eliminates the blame game entirely. Leaders who embrace this deflect credit for successes toward their teams, creating an environment where junior leaders naturally step up. Accountability cascades throughout the organization. During Hell Week, SEAL trainees race in boat crews. Boat Crew 2 consistently dominates, while Boat Crew 6 fails miserably, exhibiting finger-pointing and defeated body language. Their leader's shoulders slump, convinced he's stuck with inferior teammates. Then, instructors swap the leaders. The previously last-place crew wins 4 out of 5 races over the next hour. Same exhausted men, same heavy boats, same brutal conditions. Only the leader changed. This demonstration reveals a powerful truth. There are no bad teams, only bad leaders. The leader's attitude and approach sets the tone for everything, driving performance standards and determining success. As Colonel David Hackworth said, "There are no bad units, only bad officers." When a struggling financial services company replaced their excuse-making CTO with a leader who immediately addressed core issues and held everyone accountable, the company transformed within 6 months from missed deadlines to profitable growth. The fundamental difference wasn't talent or resources, it was leadership mindset. Because it's not what you preach that matters, it's what you tolerate. Leaders who consistently enforce standards create cultures where everyone takes ownership. When Jocko's task unit received orders to operate alongside Iraqi security forces, troops widely regarded as poorly trained and unreliable, his initial skepticism was natural. Yet commanders understood something crucial. Iraq needed capable indigenous forces to stand on its own. This strategic imperative wasn't obvious from the tactical level, but it was essential to mission success. This reveals a fundamental principle: you cannot lead what you don't believe in. Without genuine belief in the mission, leaders cannot take necessary risks or convince others to follow them into uncertainty. This belief cannot be faked. It shines through in every action and word. When a leader's confidence wavers, followers immediately sense it and begin questioning their own commitment. Belief requires understanding. Leaders must see how their piece fits into the larger strategic picture. When orders don't make sense, they must ask why and seek answers up the chain of command. Senior leaders must explain the strategic context. Consider mid-level managers struggling to implement a compensation plan that reduced pay for salespeople. They couldn't support it until the CEO explained the logic. Cutting compensation for low performers would reduce overhead, allowing price reductions that would help top performers earn more. Once they understood the why, they quickly aligned. Leadership isn't one person directing a team, but a group of leaders working together up and down the chain of command, all aligned around a common purpose they genuinely believe in. When an elite Iraqi unit arrived at Camp Corregidor, SEAL platoon commanders worried about mission competition. Jocko's response was direct. The enemy is outside the wire, meaning their real adversaries were insurgents, not coalition forces. The new unit displayed textbook arrogance, undisciplined appearances, disrespect toward experienced soldiers, refusal to coordinate, and rejection of advice. Their unwillingness to share operational details created dangerous friendly fire risks. Within 2 weeks, they were ordered to leave, watching the historic Battle of Ramadi from afar while the SEALs they dismissed fought and won. Ego, that inner voice insisting you're right, superior, and need no help, clouds everything: planning, accepting advice, receiving criticism, even self-preservation. While ego drives people to win, it becomes destructive when it prevents seeing reality or prioritizes personal agendas over team success. Implementing extreme ownership requires checking your ego and operating with genuine humility, admitting mistakes, taking ownership, and developing solutions. The SEALs strive to be confident but not cocky, proud yet never complacent. When a drilling superintendent swapped critical equipment without approval, costing hundreds of thousands in delays, his manager avoided public reprimand. Instead, "Our team made a mistake, and it's my fault. I obviously wasn't clear enough explaining why we have these procedures." This prevented ego clashes and allowed the superintendent to see the problem without defensiveness. As Jocko explained, "It's not about you. It's about the mission and how best to accomplish it." These principles, extreme ownership, shaping teams, believing in the mission, checking ego, simplifying communication, prioritizing effectively, empowering subordinates, and embracing discipline aren't theoretical concepts. They're battle-tested tools forged in Ramadi's deadly streets, where mistakes meant funerals instead of performance reviews. Their power extends beyond combat because leadership's fundamental challenges remain constant: getting people working toward common goals, maintaining standards while building trust, and deciding with incomplete information. Leadership is simple, but never easy. What separates effective leaders isn't perfection, it's how they handle inevitable failures. Subordinates respect leaders who own mistakes and learn from them. While some possess natural qualities, anyone can develop into a highly effective leader through humility, learning, and disciplined practice. The most important lesson from Ramadi: leadership exists only within a team's context. The only meaningful measure is whether the team succeeds or fails. When Task Unit Bruiser suffered devastating losses, Mark Lee killed, Ryan Job blinded, Mike Mansour diving on a grenade, their principles helped them push through grief to achieve strategic victory. Stop waiting for perfect conditions. Take ownership of that failed project, that struggling team member, that missed deadline. Check your ego and genuinely listen. Simplify that complex plan. Empower your junior leaders. Leadership isn't a position you hold, it's a burden you carry. Your team is watching. What will you show them?